Welcome back, everybody. Sacred Body Podcast. I'm here with Marissa Angeletti. I mispronounced her name last time. So my friend and colleague, Marissa Angeletti, and I, we're both moms and only had an hour. Definitely needed more of an hour for this robust conversation about birth and trauma and somatics and the role of Ayurveda in our healing. And this morning, Marissa and I each are coming with notes on what we hope to discuss, but I just want to thank and appreciate everyone who gave us their feedback, having listened to the first episode, about how it touched them, what it meant to them, what they'd like to hear more of. And we're here, I think, in service of finding some more space in this pretty polarized and fraught conversation about how to best support the birth process for the sake of its real healing potential, and also how to bring in these tools that we have that are really appropriate and powerful and time-tested resources for this most physical transformation that is birth. Also, would you all please say a silent happy birthday to Marissa? Today's her birthday, and I think that's a really special accent to our conversation.
Thank you. I am very excited to continue this conversation and feel a lot of charge around it. Hopefully that we can bring some space, bring some awareness, and also bring some compassion to the pieces of the fertility and pregnancy, birthing and postpartum journey that either aren't talked about enough or are talked about in a way that can generate some fear and pain and shame. So I'm really happy to be doing part two and hope that everybody listening can feel some more space, some more freedom, and some more permission in however it is you're traveling through the journey that you're having.
Thank you for that invitation. And I'd love to start by hearing what lingered for you the most, or what kind of arose in the wake of our conversation last week.
Yeah, I keep coming back to something you said that I love so much, which was principles versus protocols. And I love that because to me, a principle has room to be mobile. A principle has room to adapt itself and can say, based on what's happening in the moment with this person in this environment, here's what's going to serve them and here's what's not. It's this idea in Ayurveda that anything can be medicine, right? Anything can be poison. It depends on how you relate to it, how much of it you use, when you use it, and your relationship to it. Whereas a protocol would say, this must happen in this way because this is the, not even the desired effect, this is the effect. This is what this thing will bring you. And if you don't adhere to the protocol, you will suffer. And one thing I think came up last week in our conversation was the rigidity that I personally experienced in my journey wound up causing some harm. And I think that's part of where it's connected to, is that the protocol was shared in such a way that there was no adaptability, there was no other option.
Yeah.
And so I think this idea of principle is just so profound. And if we're thinking about how to talk about shifting out of binaries and how to get more nuanced in these conversations and relationships, experiences, and work, I think we can lean on the principles that we know and love and also hold space for the potentiality that we might need to invite in other principles. And that's okay. Ayurveda actually says this, right? that it should be adapted to the time and the place and the space and the people for whom it's serving in the moment. So the practices that you and I engage in today are different perhaps than they would have been thousands of years ago, because we have a different lived experience. And in my opinion, that's how it becomes responsible. You can still honor the protocol and the principle and the tradition and the lineage while also, you know, shape-shifting a little bit so that it serves.
Yeah. One of the teachers who contributed to my understanding of that or like really gave it heft for me was Prashanti in that first year of Shakti school. And I remember him talking about a client who's like a club kid in San Francisco, but having like crazy anxiety and digestive issues and other such things. You know, if you're thinking Ayurvedically, like very clear vata disorganization. And he was like, I'm going to give a remedy to this person based on their life, based on how they're living their life. So at least there's an entry point. And perhaps that medicine will start to generate more changes down the line. But right now, like, let's not talk to this person as though they're waking up at 6 a.m. and doing sun salutations. Like, right. That's not happening.
Right.
So give them medicine that's appropriate. And I loved it. I remember specifically, he was like, wear a heavy leather jacket when you go out. Wear heavy-soled shoes. Give yourself weight. And if the party doesn't get good until 2 a.m., sleep from 10 p.m. to 1 a.m. and then go out. And I was like, this is fucking brilliant.
Yes.
Like, thank you. And to me, that was so expressive of his deep reverence for Ayurveda, but also this deep internalized understanding of what the medicine is and what the principles are. And so he is an example of how, you know, maybe this is a big leap, but within the birthing space, a more in-depth understanding of like how birth actually works at the nervous system and hormonal level, which I don't see honored or respected whatsoever or talked about ever.
Mm-mm.
Like the physical hormonal reality that is the progression and all of the things that impact that steady progression or support it or can interrupt it, or, you know, it's like a much more basic conversation than I think is actually happening, that is a very natural bridge between this quote unquote natural birth and a hospital birth.
Yeah. And I want to say two things. One, the Prashanti example, In the therapy world with psychological work, you know, this is really parallel to something we call harm reduction, where let's say that same client, the club kid, is not only going to the party at 2 a.m. every night, but is also eating lots of like takeout pizza at the party. But that's all that they eat all day long. And so harm reduction would say, hey, how about instead of shifting you from only eating takeout pizza for the entire day in the middle of the night, we think about buying you like a frozen pizza and you keep that on hand in your kitchen and you can have something prior to that, so that there's this gradual, again, titrated way of creating a behavioral change that aligns with the nervous system rather than jars it. Because if you take that person and you say you need to eat three meals a day and everything needs to be warm and cooked and covered in oil and homemade, they're not gonna be served by that.
And you have to be full of love as you're making it, and if you could chant this mantra, that would be great.
And so that feels a little bit of a bridge to the conversation we're having about the birthing world. And I love that you just said, quote, natural birth, one thing I have been getting really passionate about in all of my work is language.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think I had such an awareness of this until my birth experience. But after going through what I went through, you know, I started looking for birth trauma support and birth trauma resources, and, you know, really tried to educate myself in a different way based on what I had experienced. And I came upon a few things that began to talk about all birth being natural, regardless of how the baby is delivered and what the experience is for the birthing person. That when we're talking about, let's say, a hospital birth versus a home birth or a birth center birth, we're starting to talk about hospital birth versus unmedicated birth. And I found a little bit of an exhale in that. And I've been trying to be very intentional myself around saying unmedicated birth instead of natural birth when I tell my story or talk to other people. Because there's not that room in the home birth community, in the birth center community, to have this harm reduction, to have this adaptable approach based on principle and not protocol.
I find a little bit of, a lot of, maybe I want to find the right word. Say it a different way.
Mm.
And I'm dragging my feet a little bit because I'm very conscious of how easily this could sound kind of like bypassy, like everything happens for a reason and your birth teaches you lessons. And I do believe that, but not in that kind of flippant way that glosses over. But yes, we need to have this like very necessary conversation about how we reduce harm in the space. But I think that there's an example that I'd like to share, something important about our expectations and necessary learnings as people when it comes to these profound experiences such as birth. In my case, in 1 year, I bought a condo, I got pregnant, and I got married. Mm. And within that same year, all three of those things were taken away from me.
Mm.
A storm flooded my home, destroyed it. I had a miscarriage, and there was infidelity in my marriage. And it was sort of like the reckoning with the fact that I believed each of those things in some way would save me or would guarantee that I wouldn't have to suffer. And so I do think there's this like fine line in how we talk about this that also includes like my personal evolution as a human and that reckoning with grief and loss.
Mm-hmm.
And how do we hold space without this binary shifting back and forth where it's either everything's going to be fine, just visualize the birth that you want and it's going to be beautiful, or everything's an emergency and we need to track everything constantly to make sure you and your baby don't die,
right?
Which is like the extreme version of, you know, the hospital setting,
right?
Extreme version of home birth or birth center setting. Right. And grief has been a big topic in my personal life, a big kind of focus, and also in teachers that I'm close to and friends, this conversation about how it's, you know, it's more than death. Like it's more than our culture's fear of death. It's a rejection of grief as a fundamental part of our human existence.
Mm-hmm.
It goes beyond that. Like, you know, we want to stay young forever, and how do we fold in grief to this birth process too? Because no matter what, even if you have a fairly straightforward birthing experience without a lot of trauma, there is a grief process.
Mm-hmm.
What's your experience of this grief, both before your birth,
yeah,
and after, and how do those resources, if at all, tie in with the trauma?
Yeah. Well, I want to say quickly about the expectation piece that you mentioned around, like, these things are going to save me. And I think what I've noticed, again, is some language stuff around blanket statements. Things I've seen lately have said, birth inherently softens you. This is from a doula in my area. And right. And I saw that and I was like, excuse the language, like, F that. Like, I was not softened in any capacity by my birth. And I sent it to a few other people because I knew their story, and got some responses back that were similar. You know, they did not feel softened. Mm-hmm. And so I think if we put all of our tokens in one basket, right, and say, well, if I buy the condo, if I get pregnant, if I'm married, if this experience has been told to me in this way that it will offer me redemption or it will offer me joy, if something about my reality does not meet my expectation, I will suffer more and I will have maybe a more profound experience of grief. And so I just wanted to say that quickly. And mm-hmm. my experience was, even in a straightforward pregnancy, I love your word, straightforward. There was grief, right? There was a change process happening around, like, oh, my body is different. Oh, my life will be different once this being is earthside, right? Oh, my relationship will be different. My work will be different. And so there was this grief process happening, especially towards the end of pregnancy, just around, you know, what was and what was about to become. And I think in that kind of grief process, we could say the grief is quite productive, right? It's there to help us sort of orient and prepare for the experience we're about to have or that we just had. And then there's the type of grief that comes when your expectation doesn't meet your reality. And that happened for me in my birth experience. And then there's the grief that comes when there's a trauma or a huge life change, as you mentioned in your three experiences. And those two things that tend to be the place where I think culturally and collectively, we don't have a lot of space yet. We don't have a lot of language to really sit with someone and talk with them and hold this pain. You know, grief is pain, grief is loss. And for the larger collective, that feels uncertain, especially when it's like, oh, look, I just bought a house. Oh, look, I'm married. Oh, look, I'm pregnant with a baby. If it doesn't meet that straightforward expected narrative, it can be challenging for people to engage with.
Yeah. I don't know that I have a clear understanding of, like, what is that missing piece for us to, and maybe it's as simple as this is not something that's ritualized. Like, we have ritualized certain rites of passage in our culture that aren't necessarily given, like, the fullness that they possibly ought to be. But, you know, we celebrate birthdays and we celebrate marriages and we celebrate graduations, and there's a lot of, like, we only gather together and share in a space of celebration. And you know, there is a ritual around funerals, but my experience of that, my sense of it, at least in my culture, which is Judeo-Christian, you know, white culture, it's pretty silent.
Mm-hmm.
And like the grief rituals that I've experienced, the whole point is like wailing, is noise making, is exertion to a point. And there isn't much shared space, certainly with family, right? Which I think is a somehow an important thread in this.
Yeah.
Or peers. Like if all the grief rituals I've gone to, everyone there was a stranger except for the person leading it.
Mm.
And how different it might be if I got to witness my close community in their grief, truly witness them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I have like, big waves moving through my chest as I describe it.
I wanted to take this opportunity to invite you to join me on a 3-week journey utilizing grief as a portal to emotional depth, creative self-expression, and courageous action. This program is called Sacred Moon, and it's a 3-week series that starts on the first new moon of 2022, which falls on January 3rd. And in these 90-minute sessions, we engage as a community in dialogue about different aspects of our being human, starting with this necessary engagement of depth and the depth of winter, in my experience, is grief. This is the opportunity in our seasonal cycle to really honor and mourn what has not come to fruition or what might be leaving before we're ready for it to leave, even to honor our disappointment. And in this way, by bringing honor and ritual to these sometimes negative or considered negative emotions, there's the opportunity for reconstructing relationship to not only our emotional selves, but our relationships with others and the world at large. This series, we're going to be deliberately engaging creative self-expression practices, namely image making. And this is something that I'm really passionate about and use a lot in my own healing practice. You do not have to be any sort of artist. Consider yourself an artist to participate and extract a lot of richness from this process. So I encourage you to dive in. You can find more details about this Winter Moon series in the show notes. If you have any further questions, don't hesitate to contact me, stacymoves@gmail.com. Now back to my conversation with Marissa.
And to be held in the possibility of that experience by our care providers. Because that's certainly not any amount of what I've experienced. In Western medicine, everything's so rushed. I have one midwife who has passed, who is an angel for a lot of people that I know, who held me and my husband through my pregnancy loss. And she was definitely, after that experience, it was like, she just had my heart. I knew that I could be with her through anything, all of it. But such a rare gift that was.
I've been thinking about the ritual piece quite a bit myself, especially as it pertains to things like the sacred 40-day window postpartum. And I think that that is a really powerful and beautiful set of principles that one can follow. Where I have grief and where I want to challenge those of us who are practitioners and students of this work is, what happens when you have a really traumatic experience like I did, and a majority of those first 40 days are in the hospital? The teachings would tell us that my health is doomed for the next 40 years of my life, right? And I feel like a catch in my chest saying that, because I don't want to buy into that narrative, because there are other things I'm doing now. There are things I was doing once I was home. But is it really that because I couldn't engage in the rituals I had planned that are only rituals for a straightforward birth experience, which still creates grief and trauma, right?
Yeah.
But the conversations and the orientation are really just geared towards straightforwardness. And if something deviates from that, how do you support yourself? How do you find your people? Why is it that you have to have a grief ritual in a room full of strangers? Why is it that 8 months later, I just found a birth trauma processing circle? 8 months later.
Lots of deliberate looking.
Yeah, and after lots of deliberate trying of other groups and feeling like this outcast, you know? There's not the ritual around pain in the same way there is the ritual around joy.
Felt like that needed a moment. Are you familiar with certainly you are, but David Frawley's book, Yoga and Ayurveda?
Oh, yes.
My favorite page in that book, and maybe in all books of yoga and Ayurveda, Yogi as Agni. And in this moment, being here in separate states, however many, you know, we are in the same time zone. It's a profound and wonderful thing to sense in my body the truth of what you're saying as it resonates through your body. And in these, I don't think this is a small way, but in these ways, we can give one another grace, space to process, share in that transformational fire of truth and trust. Normalizing, expressing what's happening in our bodies as we speak to things that are challenging or less. You know, that these conversations live more in my body than in my front brain. I appreciate that you named the specificity of the contrast between like this sacred window protocol and even principles, right? That's there too. And like, but I was in the hospital or in and out, and so now what? And how that beautiful life-affirming ritual almost does harm when it's like, okay, so we didn't do the 42 days. So now what for the next 42 years of my life? Am I fucked?
Yeah.
Thank you for naming that specificity, because I think that's a great example of how the protocols undermine the healing principles at play. And also I wanted to say, I just have this thought all the time where it's like, having attended a lot of hospital births, I would rather not like waste more breath or life force being like, you should do this. And why don't they do that? And don't they know? And just like being angry about it, but like maybe they could at least employ someone to do this job if you're not going to.
Yeah.
Like how about having a trained holistic postpartum care person. And postpartum care nurses are fabulous, but they're not holistically trained. Someone to be there to provide safe and reverent touch, to make sure that there's a warm, wholesome meal being delivered to this mom.
Yeah.
To give her a 5-minute breath practice.
Mm-hmm.
When she, you know, oh.
Yeah. And you say that, and I'm like, oh yes. Like I want that.
Mm-hmm.
I want that for all of us. I think inclusion is so important and so necessary. And if we think about what your quote from Frawley about Agni and what you said afterwards about truth, like Agni is inclusive, right? You can have,
mm-hmm.
not to say you're going to digest it.
Might need some help.
Yeah. But you can have various foods and spices and textures and tastes, and Agni allows you to process it. And how do I want to phrase this? An accurate understanding of truth, or a true truth, is inclusive. Truth is not just my singular preferential orientation to my experience, right? Truth holds various perspectives and viewpoints and experiences in it, just like the Agni. And so for a hospital to have the postpartum nurse and maybe to employ a doula, you know, would be such a wonderful paradigm shift. And I think on the other side, for the self-employed midwives or the birth centers, to not fearmonger and shame the hospitals, and to have, first of all, to have trauma-informed training, because yes, that was not the case for my experience with my midwife. And secondly, to have maybe a nurse, right, or another medical professional around to call upon if and when necessary.
Yeah.
So I think,
yeah, there's like that split in the home birth birth center community where it's either they're like very medical,
yeah,
actually, or rejecting of all that that could offer. And it, are you familiar with a man named Daniel Schmachtenberger?
No.
He's a really interesting thinker and someone that I've come to take great notice of. I like what he's got. I think his project is called the Consilience Project, but I heard him on a podcast talking about ways that we heal society, essentially. And he was like, what if our political debates were long form, like days long? And what if the starting point was to sit down with the moderator to outline all the points we agree on, so that the focus is, this is what we're all working towards in our different ways. And what if between the hospital and the birth centers and the home birth setting, where it's like, these are just options available to people to encourage that sense of greatest safety,
mm-hmm.
and ease in their birthing process, because everyone's point, everyone's goal is a straightforward experience.
Yeah.
Like, what if that were the goal? Straightforward experience, knowing what we know about, mm-hmm. what's, and I hesitate to use this word, but I'll qualify, best for mom, best for baby, best for the family, best for the birthing person. Like, what is unarguably best is the most straightforward process, mm-hmm. and closeness, and the ability for, you know, parent and baby to stay as close as possible with as little messing as possible. I don't think that is a hard point to agree on. Hopefully not.
Yeah.
And well, and also, you know, to this other layer of our conversation that we're having, within some birth circles, it's like the point must be this like massive soul transformation, which, like, when we make that the point, we usually do harm in getting there. When we make that the point, the focus, it's like, you can't will that to happen. And if you're trying to, you're going to probably overexpose or strip someone of their resources and grounding. And sometimes the most profound spiritual transformations are very gradual.
Mm-hmm.
They're titrated also. It doesn't have to be this like blasting, burning bush. I don't know.
Yeah, it can be both.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And to your point about what's best for a birthing person and baby and family, you know, it's about empowerment, because what is straightforward to me may not be what is straightforward to you, right? And so if someone walks in the door to their doctor or their midwife and they say, this is what I want in my care for my pregnancy, and these are my birth preferences, they should be in a place that says, great, how do we make that happen for you? Regardless of the environment or the setting they're in.
Right.
Right. Where you're not feeling coerced into one thing or the other. And you're not feeling this like immense weight of expectation for one thing or the other. Because as you well know, you don't know what's going to happen. You don't know, you cannot control certainly your pregnancy, but most especially your birth.
Yeah. And there's such a prevalence of dominance mindset for all of us. It's like, I notice it come out in the silliest ways of like, I need to feeling like I'm in control of this plant growing in my kitchen. Rather than, I mean, I'm honestly not very impressed with my ability to tune in and listen to what's needed in a lot of areas of my life. And that's certainly not what I have seen operating within the birth community either, of like really attending to the need for, it's like, I mean, of course, that ongoing dance and everything, the feminine listening and attunement and adaptation, and the masculine stability and sort of like creating a supportive track in a way. We're very much split into either or in that regard. Mm-hmm. We're going to guide this. We're going to force the issue towards this end point, or we're just going to like not do anything, or sort of like overindulge in the quote unquote feminine movement. And I don't know, that's not a clearly formed thought yet. That's just a new one.
Well, if I'm picking up on the new thought and the way I'm experiencing it, your ability to tune in and listen to yourself and what you need moment to moment is impacted by the other voices that are around you, right?
Yeah.
So
the building environment.
Yeah. And the environment, the care team, the teachers, the family, the doula, the midwife, the whomever, if those voices are crowding the space within you, it may be really difficult to hear your own voice and your own wisdom.
Yeah.
And if I'm thinking about the masculine and feminine sides, just like we've been talking about in both conversations, there's sort of a sacred righteous feminine, and there's a sacred righteous masculine, and there's a shadow feminine, and there's a shadow masculine. And if we go too far in the extreme to one or the other, we don't get the gifts that they have to offer, right? excuse me. I'm thinking about one of the many birthing books I read. And this book had, you'll probably know what I'm talking about when I say it. This book had numerous testimonials and birth stories included in it. And a majority a majority, I'm having trouble thinking of any that were not like this, were my baby was breech, and then I came to this birth center in the woods and I experienced the feminine midwifery care and I had the most blissful, amazing birth. I was in labor for days and feeling agony until I magically came here for the last leg of my labor, and then everything was beautiful and amazing. All these stories of, like, you know, I was experiencing harm or suffering, and then I went to the extreme side of the feminine and everything was alleviated.
I want to honor the sort of like piercing nature of the question. What part of yourself? I remember in our first conversation, you were speaking about the your experience in school, the class where you were shown the football player. What part of you was most available during your birthing experience? Like, how did those two extremes, the Disney princess and the football player, like, how have they been engaged by this birth experience?
At the beginning, so I had prodromal labor for almost a month. And baby wound up being delivered exactly on 42 weeks. So at, I think it was like 41 and 4, that sounds right to me, you know, is when the birth center starts getting a little like, you know, you might have to call and schedule an induction. And do you want to try a membrane sweep and a Foley bulb and, you know, this essential oil and blah, 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 blah. So I went from having this really like I said last week, beautiful, connected pregnancy toward then at the very end, feeling a lot of fear.
Yeah.
And then making it to the birth center, 41 and 5, like 2 days before, and feeling so connected to that. I wouldn't say I necessarily felt like very princessy, but I felt very at ease. I felt very much like myself. I felt really connected to my husband, Nate, and to my baby, and had a few moments with some of the staff there where I was like, oh, I'm doing it. Like, I made it to the birth center. I'm not going to have to birth at the hospital. I've got these women here with me. Like, this is great. You know, just really feeling like centered in that home. And then that changed. And I had to get transferred to the hospital. And the football player definitely came online because, I'll share this. I got to the hospital and it was pretty much like everything I did not want. Everything that I was so, so terrified of from what I had educated myself on, what a lot of the natural unmedicated birth world would call like the string of interventions or the cascade of interventions. So it was the epidural and then the Pitocin. And then there were issues with baby's heart rate and things just kind of kept going and going. And it wound up that I had to have an emergent C-section. And that was football player all the way because I had no choice. There was not this like, oh, my birth softens me and I feel so supported and at home. It was like, I am truly the most scared I've ever been for myself and for this baby. This is the last possible thing I ever wanted and it's happening. And I have to let it happen. Like, okay, put on the gear and like, go. And there were complications I experienced after the C-section, and I had a pretty rough go in the hospital recovering from it. I was sent home and told, don't worry about it, it's fine. You had a really long labor. I did. I was in labor for 60 hours before my C-section. You had a really long labor. We had to make an extra incision in your uterus. You know, you hemorrhaged, like, it's okay, you'll be fine. This was a major thing that happened to you. Okay. And then I, you know, went home. We were home for, I think, 3 or 4 days. And pain just kept up, 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 skyrocketing, skyrocketing. Got checked at the clinic. They again sent me home, said it was fine. The next day I got readmitted to the ER. And this is a football player moment. This is why I'm saying it. They would not allow my husband or my baby to come into the hospital with me. And I was in a wheelchair. I couldn't move. And I just remember sitting outside in this wheelchair with my week old baby, feeling like I have to leave my baby right now, my brand new newborn. I have to leave her and I have to go into this place that I still am so scared of alone. And that was not fairy princess energy. That was, again, the football player where I had to be like, okay, like I have to put my armor on and I have to go, even though I'm scared, even though I'm in pain, and I just have to like bear down and deal with it, you know? So that kind of archetypal energy and those qualities were really, really important. And when I talk about my love for my education, you know, this is part of why, because fairy princess really would not have survived that. Like, football player was needed.
And you knew that you had access to something like that.
Yeah. And I was scared. You know, I was crying. I was clinging to Nate. I did not want to go in alone.
Yeah.
And then of course, later, once I was, you know, actually in my room and all this, the nurse was like, oh, they absolutely should have let them come in with you. Great. Right. But I had already gone through that fear and grief and loss. I mean,
totally.
I would never wish that on anybody. And thinking about families and birthing people who, you know, maybe have a baby in the NICU or other instances where they're separated from baby, my heart goes out because I was separated as well. And it is the worst feeling. There's nothing you can do. Mm-hmm. And all you want is to be with your baby.
Yeah, it's the most instinctual urge I've ever felt in my life.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for sharing your story.
Yeah, thank you for holding it. Yeah, to everyone listening too, you know, that's the most I've said, and let's call it like a public way. And again, the drive here is not to scare, but to share how different things can come up and what you may need to call upon to support you when they do.
And I want to honor and acknowledge for everyone listening, you and I have talked several times, not just in the podcast recording conversations, and the way that you have tended to your own need to titrate the sharing. I want to acknowledge and really honor, because while there can be, let's be clear in our language, while there can be real medicine in sharing our stories, I actually just bought a book called Sharing Our Stories in Ways That Heal Us. Mm-hmm. I think that's the full title, something like that. There's it matters that you are, if not in control, like just grounded, anchored, feel some sense of stability in the story as it evolves. Yeah. Because I'm certain your relationship to the story has evolved.
Absolutely. And I think whenever we're sharing or processing a story or experience of any kind, there is very much the intention of the share. And then just like Ayurveda, like the time, the space, the place, and the people, who am I sharing with? You know, when I'm in this new group I just started, I can say more, you know?
Yeah.
I can say what happened at the birth center and what happened at the hospital and why I got readmitted and what happened after that, right? And go into more of the fullness of it. But for our purposes and what we're talking about, that wouldn't serve me and it likely wouldn't serve others. So there's also this awareness of why am I saying what I'm saying, you know?
Gosh, Marissa, we're going to have a part three.
Yeah.
Why am I saying what I'm saying? Our communication and the degree of almost like self-inflicted trauma comes from not being aware of the who and the when and the where and the why and the impact that has on our expression of self and need.
Yeah.
To honor our time and our families, I'm going to bring this conversation to a close. Happy birthday.
Thank you.
What a gift to get to know you and have this conversation with you in these last, you know, couple of months that you and I have been consciously leading toward this. Wow. This is a wonderful conversation, and I'm definitely leaving with like this kind of churning feeling in my belly, but it's not uncomfortable. It's an activation, like a digestive process. There's a lot that I'll be chewing on through the rest of the day. Thank you.
Thank you. I just feel heart energy. Yeah, it feels nice.
Thank you, everyone listening. And we'd love to hear your feedback, your comments on this conversation.
Thank you so much for joining us today. If you like this episode, please leave a comment, please share through all your channels, and you also have the opportunity to make a donation to ensure that these amazing conversations continue with ease. I appreciate you being here. I'm curious to hear how this conversation has impacted you, and I hope that you'll join us again.